now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. A lot of these people that have all these abilities, who have celestial star ancestry, they're operating not only throughout this cosmos, but in higher planes, and they're working against the Draco Empire. The photonic energy and the cosmic rays will activate our higher centers. And it's incumbent upon us to ride that frequency wave. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, our very special guests are Stephen Strong, Evan Strong, and Michelle Rishia. The stated aim of Stephen and Evan Strong is to share understandings related to Australia's rich ancient past with a view to learning how that may be applied now and in the future. We operate under the doctrine of Wirijin, Black Fella, White Fella Dreaming, in remembrance of Carno W., spokesperson for the Ramangeri. Australia has been visited in the past by the ancient Egyptians, Phoenicians, Chinese, Spanish, and Portuguese, and perhaps others. We are trying to change the worldview of Australian Aboriginal people and culture positively and help to show their effect upon human development and civilization. Our main brief is to prove through scientific fact that which the elders insist is true. We have assembled facts about archaeological finds and also early contact accounts, genetics, serpent myths, dreaming stories, Amerindian myths, parallels in religious texts, etc., into one coherent theory. Unlike the authorities in one field who are limited in their specialty, we draw all the disciplines together and attempt to resolve the confusion. Our claim is supported by genes, mitochondrial DNA, blood, and many experts that Australian original people set sail from Australia, not to Australia, 50,000 years ago. We claim that Australian original people sailed to and settled in America over 40,000 years ago and visited many other places, including Egypt, Japan, Africa, India, etc. They were the first Homo sapiens who evolved before the sapiens of Africa and who gave the world art, axes, religion, marine technology, culture, cooperative living, language, and surgery. Stephen Strong is a secondary school teacher with a background in archaeology and education. He was involved in the formation of a graduate diploma of Aboriginal education for the New South Wales Department of Education, writing units on traditional law and contemporary history. He also co-authored the highly successful Aboriginal Australia, a language and cultural kit. His son, Evan Strong, has a background in social science, anthropology, and psychology. They have spent many years learning and living with the Bundjalung Language Confederation and Gumalaroi people of northern New South Wales. Their books include Shunned, The Hidden History of the Original Australians, and Out of Australia, Aborigines, the Dreamtime, and the Dawn of the Human Race. Their websites are ForgottenOrigin.com, and their Facebook group is facebook.com/ForgottenOrigin. I will provide all the links to all their websites on our dedicated YouTube channel and on to the Cosmic Switchboard website. Our other guest is Michelle Rishia. Michelle Rishia is a biologist from Canada with an interest in natural medicine and sustainability. She spent 12 years studying and living with the Mayans in southeastern Mexico and Guatemala. During this time, she became involved with the mysteries of the ancient pyramids and megalithic sites around the world. After seeing her first pyramid in 1993, she began studying anthropology, archaeology, and comparative theology. She now has more than 20 years' experience in the field. The Mayans affectionately called Michelle Chelita, which means little rainbow. She was eventually given the title of spokesperson and storyteller, a unanimous decision by several tribes in Chiapas and Yucatan. This decision surprised her, as she had not requested this title. After much insistence, Michelle agreed and has felt both honored and burdened by the responsibility. Michelle is now sharing the ancient stories and teachings as requested by the Mayan elders and shamans. These stories include humanity's true history and speak of an ancient advanced global civilization that we once shared and will share again. And her Facebook name is Shalita Michelle Rishia, and we will have all of her contact information on the Cosmic Switchboard website as well as our dedicated YouTube channel. So without any further ado, Stephen and Evan Strong and Michelle Rishia, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah, great, thanks. Thanks for having me on your program.
Thank you. This is quite a delight, and my listeners will benefit from all of your knowledge. Now, first, the Strongs, your information is so compelling. For so long, the academic world has inculcated into the minds of people this notion that humanity, as we currently understand the term, had its origins in Africa, the so-called out-of-Africa theory. And what you have done, both you and your son, Evan, have shown through a variety of disciplines that this is not the case. Would you like to comment on that and tell us how you became involved in this quest for the truth and identifying the original source of humanity, which may be in Australia?
Well, it's a fairly long journey, but to make it very simple, I was a teacher involved in teaching Aboriginal studies throughout the state of New South Wales and Australia, and became increasingly apparent that what we were teaching the kids was a load of rubbish because I spoke to the elders and their story wasn't the same. Eventually, I had confrontation with the director of Aboriginal education about where the content should go and decided the day after to leave, and that's basically what we've been doing since. And unfortunately, my son got dragged along with it, haven't you, all the way through.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when it comes...
kicking and screaming, but no.
When it comes to the out-of-Africa theory, you've got to remember, ladies and gentlemen, from the very beginning, when genetics started, way back, they started using it. That theory came out straight away with that genetics. That genetic work that took place, 30, 40 years ago. It was very crude to begin with, and it was very limited in the survey. And, of course, no surveys were ever done at that stage of original people. They were not included in anything. They were an afterthought. They're thought to be a sub-branch of the Africans. Therefore, they were given no interest whatsoever. What we've found, and Evan's done a lot of research bringing this information in, is all of the evidence coming out of the world now in different places, Australia in the center. Now, there's so many different studies at the moment. The hardest thing would be thinking of on which one do you choose. But the one that comes to mind has got to be the one that was done in America. Now, Harvard University were involved, as were six other universities. It was a three-year study, heavily funded, and it was considered to be the most authoritative investigation of the genetic story of America. Okay? Now, nobody's going to argue the quality of the researchers nor the rigor involved. And I can tell you the comment is made time after time by David Reich and others. He was from Harvard. We tried to make the result go away, but every time it got more conclusive and they couldn't get rid of it. Now, this is what they did. They took two very, very isolated Amazonian tribes, which basically married between themselves only and kept their genetics pure. The thinking was being so isolated and genetically basically insular, you would get a better idea of tracing back the origin of these people. Makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? This is good science and this is what we use. So what did they find?
Not what they expected.
And that's why they kept back going over it and rechecking. And they said every time the answer got stronger. They found the closest genetic link by our country mile was Australia, Papua New Guinea, and the Andaman Islands. And everywhere else was daylight. Now, what they found was that the original people of Australia are the ancestors of those people. That's what they found. Now, that's a problem because the out of Africa theory tells us that someone wandered out of Africa 75,000 years ago, spent 25,000 years in stasis. Then a couple of them stood on the shores of India or Indonesia, sailed to Australia, got there, forgot they hadn't come back, and they got stuck there for the next 50,000 years. Well, what are they doing in America? How did that happen? What are their genes doing there? Now, you can do study after study. And the other one we'll use, and we'll sort of conclude with that, otherwise we'll become a two-hour talk on genetics, won't it?
Oh, which everybody loves.
Oh, yeah, especially us. It's just boring as shit, guys, but you have to get away through the crap. There was a study done recently where they decided to look for Adam. You know, Eve came from Africa, and I always said, well, where did Adam come from? They said, well, it must have come from Africa. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the only place in the world Adam didn't come from was Africa. That is the one thing I can tell you for sure. Because all the studies have been done on mitochondrial DNA of the women because it's easier to measure, it's more predictable. Y chromosomes for men are much more difficult to work with and hard to measure, and they can't really date them. They're a piece of rubbish. But what they can do is tell us where our daddies and our grandfathers came from. And what they did is they did the walkthrough experiment where they looked at, it's the biggest study of sperm in the world ever done, and they took 400 vials of sperm and specifically measured it against 13 distinct African markers, which means there was 5,200 possible hits, and the number of ones that were the same was none, not one. And these people were taken from all over the world bar Africa. And what they found is the only thing they shared was nothing to do with Africa. Now, they've done a tree from that, and they've got 28 different lines that are male lines. Three are African, and guess where they're found? All in Africa. The other 25 come from a different ancestor that is older than African and has to be older than Asian and European, which are dated to 40,000 years. And there's only one group left. That's the original people. Now, that's the sort of information that's coming out recently, okay? And that's the sort of information that's confirming the same story. I can tell you this now, that we were taught in school, well, Evan was, I was taught about basically, when I was taught in school, we were still trying to work out what the wheel was. But when Evan was at school, he found out other things. And what he was taught was that Homo sapiens came into existence 200,000 years ago from Africa. Well, I can tell you one thing now, everyone in the world has agreed now, oh, we got that wrong by 500,000 years. Homo sapiens came into existence around 700,000 years ago. But everyone that went to school recently still thinks it's 200. And the one thing we know for sure is, and we know that Chris Stringer, who announced this, said there's two things we know for sure. Number one, we got the date right, we got the place wrong. We don't know where they come from. So why are we teaching out of Africa when the latest research about the beginning of humanity has moved from about 500,000 years and we don't know where it came from? That is the only two things we know for sure. So really, our job's simple. Well, it's very simple. I get Evan to do it for me. Collect all the data and give it to me. And what we then do is we realize, oh, my God, all these people look at little parts of the story. We try and do a big picture. And the big picture is humanity has a completely different origin than the one we're taught at the moment. And what we've also found is humanity is not only just its origin and the way it behaved for the last 500,000 years is completely different to how we behave now. And that's something we've got to learn.
Can you describe what you mean by certain terms such as haploid, mitochondrial, DNA, and other forms of genetic evidence? Because they did this study, I can't remember the names of the researchers, they initially concluded that, and it was conjecture at their part, which they later admitted was conjecture, but their studies confirmed their belief at a time that humanity originated from an Eve-type character in Africa, but in light of recent findings through the research into mitochondrial DNA, haploids, etc., that information was not quite valid as far as their conclusion.
Yeah. You're talking about Professor Alan Wilson and Rebecca Cairns. See, they were the ones who put out the seminal paper where they introduced the molecular clock and the concept of Eve. It was them that created this. And they actually had in that paper a pronouncement that we got it right and the paleontologists were wrong after 15 years of agreement. It was really as much a triumphal declaration of victory as it was a statement of archaeology. But I've got to tell you, you have to remember in that paper, and people have forgotten this, and believe me, it's true.
It's worth it.
probably came from Africa. Mm. They never said, this is very important, the people who put the paper out never said from Africa, they said probably. And the second part that people don't know, if you read their papers, go to the back two pages and you'll find the clock they designed to work out where people come from and their lineage came from two assumptions based in Australia. Now, if it turns out those two assumptions are wrong, then their paper is wrong. So that's what you, what actually then happened was, assumptions were, number one, the original people were one-third as genetically diverse as the rest of the world because they were the youngest. And number two, they got there 50,000 years ago. And from that, they made all their calculations, okay? And they figured, well, then, if the Africans are fully diverse, they're one-third as diverse, and they got there 50,000 years ago, 60,000 years ago, multiply by three, we get around 200,000 years, there's your clock. That's how it all started. Now, what happened was Rebecca Cairn thought she just checked on one of their assumptions, that they were one-third as genetically diverse. And what she did was she did a study of about 126 files, was it, Evan?
I think something like that.
And 26 tribes throughout the world to find out something about their genetics. And what she found out was, my God, we got it wrong. She said the original people came into existence 400,000 years ago, not 50, which is a multiplication of 8, from two groups, not one, which is a multiplication of 2, and they're not related in any way to the African people. Now, Alan Wilson, who is the head professor, right, and the main person in the paper, and also a male, which helps a lot, because Rebecca is a female, isn't she? Yes. And in those days in America, and probably still now, that was an issue. Believe me, we checked it. So he came down to Australia, because he had the funding and the money, she didn't, and did a sampling of his own. What he did was he came down the first town and found 21 strands of mitochondrial DNA, which is something the woman carries and gets passed on from woman to woman, and every 3,500 years you get one genetic mutation. So every time there's a mutation in that strand, that multiplies to 3,500. That's why everyone does mitochondrial DNA, because you can do the NAS. You can't with Y chromosomes. Then he came a second time and sampled another 10, full descent of original people from around Australia. So that's a sampling of 31. And what he found was he had counted up at least 22 different strands within those 31. A 70% mutation rate, but here's the problem. 22 times 3,500 is 77,000 years. He said 50. And then he said this, if I sampled more at a 70% mutation rate, would that continue at that rate or would it be older? And then he said, at the finish of all this, he got it completely wrong, and he said Homo erectus, a few erectus got into Australia at least 400,000 years ago, and it was there that Homo sapiens evolved and went elsewhere. So what we have is the two people who wrote the seminal paper within 10 years have both said, no, and not of Africa, it's Australia. And the reason is, as the genetics gets more precise, we're not fighting against science, but we're with them, aren't we?
Yep.
All the way along. As they get more specific and start to map the genomes and stuff like that, we get more information, and all of that information is not coming out of Africa. That's what we know.
Well, it sounds like they kind of stopped the study, because it seemed as if he continued in that vein, the dating back would have gone further and further and back in time. So he kind of had a neat cutoff point at 50,000.
No, he went on. He got to 77. The reason he stopped is that very inconvenient. Yeah. I think a bit inconsiderate on his behalf. He went and died.
Oh, shoot. Well, that'll do it. Yeah.
That will do it. Obviously, that stops the paper. He was in the process of putting all this together. You see, the second time he came down was about a year before he died, and then he had the full data, because it takes a while to take that back, to be analyzed and get back. And he was in the process, I would think, of writing a paper, retracting everything, because Rebecca Cairn, it's not easy being a female in America, and we know this from other women who work there, don't we, Emma? Like, the other one that's struggling there, Cynthia Irwin, someone.
Oh, Irwin,
yeah. Yeah, look, it's really tough there if you want to be radical. He was writing, I assume he was writing the paper up, because he came here twice and went around the country doing it, but when you die, well, that means we can all just forget about it, can't we?
The next question I have kind of segues into the time when we go back and how it ties into the Aboriginal dreaming. It'll be a good point to bring Michelle into the discussion, too. But this problem for the mainstream academics is further complicated, Stephen and Evan, by the fact that what seems to be Aboriginal skeletons have been found throughout North America and elsewhere throughout the world. Would you like to comment on that?
They have. They've been found in North America, South America. They've been found in Malaysia. They've been found in Japan. They've been found. Hey, there are seven people in India to this very day that are walking skeletons. In the last genetic study done by the Indian government, conducted by Dr. Rao, about 3 years ago, they did a study of about 800, 900 very original people, Dravidian people in the desert, in the forest. And they found seven people carrying complete, distinct Australian Aboriginal signatures. So if you want to talk about skeletons, we've got some that are still walking in India. The Andaman Islands, you'll find them again. All over the place, people went. You see, you've got to remember, there was a time way back when there was, and I know this is something Michelle's very strong on too, one global civilization.
Yes.
What we've done is we've deliberately, at the top level, underestimated the technology they used and the skills they had and the intelligence they had. We think we're the crowning glory. I'm sorry. Our studies are adamant about one thing. We are sitting in a huge trough, now starting to clamber out. We are not at the top of our game. It happened earlier on many times, and then there's been these mistakes. Like Atlantis and like now, where civilization gets overtaken by technology and we have to pull back again. So what we found is that it goes way back. The date they're giving now of 750,000 to the origin of Homo sapiens, I want you to think back, ladies and gentlemen, 20 years ago, such a date would have been laughed at by every scientist on the planet. That was announced by Chris Springer, who was the keynote speaker at the fifth conference in Europe of all the scientists. And he said, I've got bad news to tell everyone. He didn't say it happened, did he? But he was disappointed. He said, I've got really bad news. He said, I don't know what's going on anymore. My point is, 750 is where they're putting the starting line now. It goes back further. It really does. And if you want to find the truth of where it goes back, don't ask the scientists. Ask the keepers of the indigenous wisdom, because they kept the story from the beginning. And that's where they'll find the clue to this. It will not be found in the test tube anymore, because those guys now have no idea what's going on. And even when the evidence is in front of their face, the first thing they do is look elsewhere. So you've got to ask people who are prepared to talk. It's the old ones. It's the old ones who are faithful to the old ways. They'll tell you. That's where we've got to look.
Yes, and from what I understand, the Aboriginal elders and folks, when the Strongs refer to the original people, they're referring, from my understanding, to the Aboriginal people of Australia. The original elders say that their cosmology dates back to their origins in the Pleiades, and they have been here on Earth and here in Australia for at least a million years. Now, this is a good time to segue to Michelle. Would you like to comment on that and also provide your insight, because you've been plugged in to the Mayan shamans for some time. Indeed, as I pointed out in the intro, they have inducted you, if you will, into their teachings, into their way of life. Would you like to share a bit about how you got into the good graces of the shamans and how their information may jibe with or in some way connect with what the Strongs are talking about?
Okay, well, I do agree with most of the Strong's theories as well. I guess the first thing I'd like to do in order to connect the two stories would be to talk about not only the genetics, but the Mayans also claim that the Australian Aboriginals are their half-brothers, and they have all kinds of legends about traveling through the seas and using the ocean currents and arriving around Sydney. And there has been a little bit of evidence found in that general direction. So I'd have to say that that's a really interesting connection. Now, apparently, you didn't need any power. You could just use the ocean currents, but you had to do it at the right time of the year. And the place to jump off the Americas was the top of South America, and it would basically, like I said, land you in either New Zealand or Sydney. Now, the way back would be travel up Australia, get up to China, and if you put a boat in China at the right time of the year, it'll take you directly across to Central America. So there was a conveyor about the ocean's currents that was used in the old. There's also rumors of many different things. They talked about being able to travel underneath the earth through tunnels, and they also talked about traveling, you know, in the sky by flight. And a lot of these things, as a scientist for me, were really very, very hard to deal with. So now I'll talk a little bit about how I became involved in it. I actually studied medicine in university. As a biologist, it was my concentration is what I was most interested in, investigative medicine. So I went out there to learn a little bit more about natural medicines being used by the Mayans, and never in a million years expected that I would have any interest in the pyramids or archaeology or anthropology, anything like this. But the Mayans, when they decided to teach me a little bit, I actually got to see some of the underground cities, and they were talking a lot of legends about the ancestors. They were talking about the oblong skulls, and they were talking about the beings that live inside the earth, or the underworld beings. And of course, I thought these were just legends, but they actually took me into some of the underground cities, and I saw not just one bone or one tomb, but I saw many, many tombs and many, many bones. And that made me question things, because here I had solid evidence in front of me that my history had never taught me about, that science didn't seem to be looking at. And it's taken me on a journey, and to this day I'm still investigating, I'm still researching, but it is definitely a global thing. We've had various bones found in Australia, various skulls of different types of humanoids or two-footed hominoids that are very similar to Homo sapien, but are definitely not Homo sapien. And whenever something doesn't seem to fit into this Darwinian theory of evolution, it just gets swept under the carpet and it doesn't really get discussed. So it's fantastic that we have programs like this, and people like Stephen and Evan Strong that'll go and try to research the real history of humanity. We definitely are not being told the real history of humanity. And I think it's key that we talk about these things, especially if, I mean, many people can say, oh, well, the bones that you saw, this is in the past. You know, it might not have anything to do with today. But how do we know that these beings aren't still with us, or if they aren't here, that they may not return? And if they are returning, then I think it's important to know how humanity dealt with the ancestors, and of course, which ones were benevolent and which ones were a little bit tricksters for us, and maybe how we can deal with it in the future. It's always good to look at the past in order to know where we might want to go in the future.
Definitely, and that's how our history and our own understanding of our origins has been obscured from us, because, you know, the power system had a vested interest in keeping us ignorant about our past, because that prevents us from learning about who we truly are. When I think of the information that the Strongs and yourself and others have provided, like, for example, you mentioned the 2-foot-tall hominid that's been found, evidence that has been found in, I believe, in Papua New Guinea and elsewhere. This jibes also with what has been taught by the native elders in North America, that there are little people. The Cherokee have this tradition of two types of little people. One is a group of little people that dress similar to themselves, and then there's another group of little people that dress and appear as what we would think of as more Gaelic, Celtic, fairy-like, wearing kind of like almost lederhosen and hats and whatnot. And then also the Celtic fairy faith throughout Europe and Northern Europe. So there's been a long tradition of the elders knowing that other forms of life existed parallel to us, coexisted with us. Also, the concept of giants, because these stories, like the Lord of the Rings, where giants and small people and humans coexisted, that was deeply embedded in the lore of human history. Now, Stephen, Michelle made a very good point about the seafaring nature of both the Mayans, and of course you've done some research into the seafaring nature of the original people in Australia. The original people in Australia really got around, didn't they?
They did. There's never a land bridge. They sailed everywhere. And look, the problem is that the genetic evidence is already in the original genes that proves that they went around the world. I mean, if you look at the, we're talking about different types of hominids and stuff. If you look at the original people, they can have within them 6% Denisovan genes. I'm actually 4.7. People boast about the fact they're 1% Neanderthal, something like that.
But what does Denisovan mean?
Denisovan are a group of hominids that range between Siberia to Spain. They have dates of between 16,000 and half a million years ago. I've seen pictures of them. We've got pictures up in our presentation. And if you walk past the Denisovan today, you'd say g'day and keep walking. You wouldn't even think they look different to us. This is what the artist did for us, didn't they?
Yeah.
They look no different than us. Now, the problem is those Denisovans are in Siberia. Well, what are they doing with original genes? How did that happen? There's only one way, because the original people, because they've always told us, remember, all the experts tell us only Homo sapiens can make boats that sail across oceans. All the other hominids are too stupid, so we're told. That must mean if I've got 4.7% Denisovan in my genetic bank at the moment, my ancestors had to sail to Siberia and get very up close and extremely personal with Denisovans for this to occur. So we know they sailed. Now, here's the trick there. The Denisovans are half a million years old at least, and their closest relatives today are the original people. When did that connection start taking place? How long have they been together? And they were never in Australia. So the only question we've got is, we know the original people sailed to other places. It's just a matter of how far back. And it's there where I think the Mayans and the elders are adamant. Start putting six and maybe seven figures into your numbers, at least six, high six, and go into seven, because they're the sort of numbers they're talking about. And they do talk about the Pleiadians ad infinitum, non-stop. It is an obsession with original people. I was with an elder, Arnie Nelly, a couple of days ago, and I brought out some of the rocks that are the Star Rocks collection, and she was like a little kid. She only spoke a language. I had to ring the next day and ask the interpreter what she said. And the whole of the story about those rocks were about the sisters being chased and about the male that wasn't as bad as we thought he was, Evan.
No, we thought he was pretty naughty.
No, he actually loved all of them, and he tried to do seduction dances, but it never worked. It worked because the oldest female of the Pleiades was wiser than anyone and saw through it. But when she left and went back, which was a surprise, we don't know what happened then. But what I can tell you is, all of the elders are insistent, and they will all tell you the same story, that the Pleiadians came to this country and genetic sharing took place. That's just part of the history, and it doesn't do us any favours saying it, because a lot of people attack us for that non-stop. But that is what we have no choice, because that's what I get told every time I go near an elder now. They all want to talk about it as on top, so below. So, yeah, it's very much a part of the story of what we're doing. But remember, I've got to make one point. I remember Peter Evans, when I was given ceremony by the original people, by the Ramangeri, told us they circumnavigated the world in a figure eight. And Peter said to me, he said, and how do you think we did that? I said, by boat. He said, yes, and how else did we do it? And he looked at me smiling, and I knew what he was going to talk about. I said, Peter, we're not going to touch the UFO story. We're not going to go near the Pleiades and that sort of stuff. I said, there's no way we'll ever talk about this sort of stuff. And in our first three books published by University Press in America, we never mentioned any of this stuff.
No, definitely not.
Not a word. I told him I'm not touching. He smiled at me and said, you'll be talking about it all the time before you know about it. Because he said, we traveled around the earth other than by boat. There's other ways they could do it. So, yeah, we've got to get used to a completely different story of humanity and where it came. And it's very important people understand that for the great majority of the time, when we had this one civilization that went around the world, there were no wars. There was no conquest of another place. We lived in perfect understanding with every other group. And no one lusted over another person's territory or goods and chattels. That wasn't part of the psyche of what happened. But every now and then, when we lose track, then we misbehave. And all those horrible things that humans can do, Every now and then it pops up. The problem is at the moment, the longest we've been off track is the last 7,000 years. And that's got to stop. It's been the longest time we've walked away from how we should be.
I understand that the Aboriginals, the original people, have quite an advanced understanding of astronomy. We'll talk a bit about astronomy and cosmology with Michelle and how it fits in with the Mayan scheme of things. But did you want to comment about the astronomy aspect of it, Stephen?
Oh, yeah. Look, can I start by, we've been to this place and we've actually written articles on it. We work with the elders there. The oldest astronomical site in the world is not Stonehenge, it's Wurdi Youang. And it's dated to be a roundabout at the moment. They're talking of dates of 20,000 years. Stonehenge is 5,000 years. And it marks out exactly the same things as Stonehenge does. Summer and winter solstice. There are star maps around Australia that are older in rock arrangements. We've been to one rock platform we're carrying, haven't we, Evan?
It's got 1,000.
It's got, within the two of them, there'd be over 1,000 star maps there that relate to different places. Near Carrion, we have been to a star map that's been reliably dated by Sydney University, 4,600 years old, and has the different intensities of the stars and in exactly the right position. That is exactly the same time when Stonehenge fell, working out, oh, the sun comes up here and the moon comes down there. In Australia, they're doing constellations with different sizes, marking out the sizes exactly in the position they're in. We even got told how they do it. And what they actually do is they make these special puddles. And when the star system reflects into the puddle at night, they can measure out the distances of the stars and they take them elsewhere and do it proportionally to that. So these guys were the past experts. We've been to a site in the Snowy Mountains that marks out the constellation or the alignment of five planets. And this is about 15,000 rocks that mark out an alignment that takes out once every couple of hundred years. That's an alignment of the five planets. That is a lot more, and that happened before Stonehenge again. The evidence is all over the place. And what's interesting about this country is the original people do not look at the stars. They look in the dark spaces in between. They're more taken by the shapes within the stars and the dark spaces than they are about the stars themselves. So when they look at a system, they look at it in a way that no one else looks at it. They look at it back to front, man. They don't look at the points of light. They look at the darkness behind it, and the points of light come second.
The Mayans have something very similar as well. They said it's not only what's marked, what are the points of light, so what are the pyramids, they said, but the spaces in between are equally as important. Any true knowledge will always be hidden in the space. It won't be marked with a pyramid or something like that for someone to find. And so the Mayans also look in the sky, they look into the spaces in between, because apparently a lot is happening in the darkness as well. The Mayans also talk about the dark rift up there surrounding the central sun in the middle of a Milky Way, and they pay more attention to the dark rift than they do to the stars that we can actually see, because so much is happening there and it affects us so much. So I find it interesting that original people in Australia and original people in the Americas can concur on something even though they're on the other side of the world, and apparently we're told that they're such different cultures. It doesn't appear that they're so different after all. And the other thing that I wanted to comment on as well is when I mentioned about the Mayan using the oceans and the skies, but mostly the oceans, because that's the easiest for us to actually prove at the moment, using the oceans to navigate. That didn't mean that other cultures didn't use them as well. So, of course, we would be talking about the Aboriginal people and other cultures also using these ocean currents. This is a global trade that everybody used and everybody cooperated in and everyone worked together. And hopefully we will be able to lift up this veil and stop trying to argue over which culture is right, which culture is better, and start looking at our similarities instead of our differences in order that we can do this again. Because I really believe that knowledge has become fragmented. It's just far too easy to control. Unfortunately, the universities these days, anybody that's working for supporting their children, it's very easy to say, oh, if you start talking about this, I'm sorry, you're not going to get grant money. We don't want you to talk about these other skulls or this type of archaeology that's coming up right now, or you won't get grant money. And unfortunately, most people that need to feed their children are going to do what they're told in order to get a paycheck put on their table. But there are a few of us, like Stephen and Evan Strong, myself, yourself, who are working towards the truth, who don't actually seek money. We seek truth. And so hopefully as more and more of us get on this, we'll be able to get the story around about what's really happening and what the true history of humanity is. We have megalithic structures around the world. We've got concrete evidence, which also links all of these cultures together. So we can't have such similarities between the Asian pyramids, the Egyptian, the African pyramids, the pyramids through the Middle East with the ziggurats, the Mayan pyramids. Even here in Australia, in China, it's all linked. They're all very, very similar archaeological constructions. On top of that, we've got similar species of humans being found, like the oblong skulls, the little people. We've got many different forms of previous human beings, which may or may not still be with us. We have no way of knowing, that are not being investigated now by science. And we really need to get our eyes opened and start investigating this a little bit more. So thank goodness for people like yourself and Stephen and Evan Strong that we're doing this kind of research.
What's important to understand also is the ancients, they built these megalithic structures along energetic ley lines in comparison to the modern construction, which seems to just wipe out any last vestiges of feng shui. It seems almost as if they build their constructions in a way that is guaranteed to create discordant energy and inner disruption and inner disharmony. Now, Michelle, did the Mayan elders ever talk about their star origins? Did they ever mention, for example, the Pleiades and if that fits into their scheme of things?
They talked about many different star people. The Pleiadians were one of them. It's hard to match the actual bones and tombs with the legends, but they talked about the Venetians as well and beings that come from different planets. Now, whether these planets represent places on our Earth, because how they mapped out the planet was by looking what's above, so below. So all of these star systems actually represented also a place on Earth. It's very interesting. But yeah, they definitely talked about the Seven Sisters, the Pleiadians, how they're some of our ancestors, along with Andromeda and the blue beings, whoever the blue beings are.
Stephen, the concept of dreaming, the dream time, is a fundamental aspect of not just original people lore, but that's kind of a limiting kind of concept where a lot of people think that dream time and the dreaming is exclusive to the Aboriginal people. But actually, there's a more expansive understanding behind it, behind what the original people really say. Did you want to comment on that?
Yeah, a lot of people in Australia, we've got Dreamtime Golden Books where we have dreaming stories inside them. It can be picked up on a lot of different levels. It's not so much a religion, it's an attitude and a relationship with the planet and with the land that they live in. It's really hard to quantify other than to say that the dreaming will give you your roots with the land. And when you say you're a child and you become a man and you get initiated, you get cut, you'll then probably spend the next 3-4 months walking out on country from day to day. I mean, the uncle will be watching you from a distance, but he'll keep away as much as he can, if not all the time. And you'll spend time on your own. Now, some people think that that's, you know, going walkabout, this is just a mindless wandering in the bush. It's the exact opposite. It's where you give your mind up and you just become with the bush. You walk with the bush, listen to the land, and you start to form a relationship with the land. And as you form that relationship, that's when the dreaming begins. As a child, before you become initiated, you are allowed to play, you're allowed to laugh, you don't have many responsibilities. No one's allowed to hit you, and basically an original tribe in the past, it was always found by the laughter of children. They could hear them miles away before they got there. It was so important that children were happy, and they had no responsibilities. But once you became an adult, you formed responsibilities with the land. That's really what it is, and with the spirits of that place. And as you went further up, you'd be told more information. You'll be shown that dreaming story that you heard to begin with, which was a story about maybe the kookaburra bringing in the day each day. And if it doesn't laugh, there'll be no life. then you'll find out it means a lot of other things down the line, and you'll find that the kookaburra represents a totem, and all sorts of things will start to reveal. It is an evolving process that takes lifetimes to get through. It takes many lives to get through. So it's not so much a religion. It's the way you walk on the land. It's the way you dance. It's the way you sing. And it's the way you talk to the spirits of the land. So it's basically how you live the whole of your life, every moment. You see, original people believe the spirits are in the land and watch every step you take. And if you break the law, then a bird will come and show the elders and put on a dance and give you up. And they'll ask you, the bird's upset, somebody's done this, who is it? And they'll all look at this person and they're given up. So really what you learn is that every step you take and every breath you make is with the grace of the gods and with them as your witness. And once you start to learn that, then you behave in a way that's honorable. So that's what it is. But it's not a religion as such. It's basically living with the planet.
One thing that I've noticed as far as the original peoples in Australia and the lore and the land relationship understanding of Native American tribes is they know that they have an intrinsic connection with the land, that they are one with Mother Earth, Father Sky, the Great Spirit, and they have been given the understanding that they are the caretakers of the world. And one thing that I've noticed in contrast, when we look at another out of Africa theory is the Anunnaki, which I do believe they existed. I do believe they did manipulate humanity genetically, but I think they came much later than the Palladians and others. And one thing I've noticed about some of these other beings that interfered a lot here is they inculcated into their genetic hybrid stock, if you will, the concept of animal husbandry, the concept of agriculture. So right off the bat, animal husbandry abuses animals. They don't teach the people to honor the animals, to ask for essentially volunteers from the animal world who would be willing to give up their body in a way that benefits the people, but also that their soul and their body is respected and they're wished well on their spiritual journey. Likewise, as far as agriculture is concerned, that's something, a concept that's completely alien, no pun intended, to the Native American people, to the original people in Australia, because it rapes the land. Did you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I think it's a very important comment. I think it really does highlight something. It is our belief that the American Indian people are the closest relatives to the original people. And the ones, think about the last two continents to give up the proper way of living in time order are America and Australia. They were the last two to lose that. They were holding on to this truth all the way through. In Australia, when we came here, the original people did not wear clothes. None of them farmed the land and none of them caged the animals. If you go back to the Genesis, what was it that Cain and Abel did that caused so much displeasure with God? One farmed the land and the other one caged animals and they fought each other and one killed the other. And that was the beginning of the fall. And that's when they walked away from the paradise, which in Australia never happened. And nor did it happen with the American original people until the whites came in both cases and they brought their problems and their concerns and inculcated and ruined what was here. But in both cases, that is a fundamental part of a relationship with the land where you don't contest with it, where you live with it. Now, that's not to say in Australia they did not farm, because they did, didn't they, Evan?
Yes.
They were farming wheat, grass seed.
Millets.
Millet, 18,000 years ago, proof of that, well before they did it in Egypt, and they were grinding it. But what they would do was nardoo seed. They would have the seed, and next year, when it was finished, they'd throw it on the ground. They would not dig it up. And if it grew from the ground, they'd harvest again and throw it on the ground again. So they were farming before anyone else. But the rule is you cannot cut the earth and leave it uncut. If you dig for yam, you must cover up straight away, or you, as the elders would say, you are hurting my granny's tummy. Cover it up, she's in pain. So you pick it up, fix up the cut, and it's all sealed up again. So you're right about that. They are vestiges of the old way, the proper way of living with the land and with the earth. And the original people and the Amerindian people held on longer than any other group. But if obviously it's now gone, that doesn't mean it can't be brought back.
Well, we've reached the end of the first half, and we're just getting started. This has been a fascinating first half, and we've got so much more to go over. Michelle, can you tell the listeners how they can get a hold of you and how they can find your information online?
Yep, I have a Facebook page I can be reached at, and it's Shalita Michelle Risha, and hopefully that information will get posted as well.
Absolutely,
so I don't spell it for
you. Absolutely, I'll post that.
That's right. I also have an email in case someone wants to contact me as well. Once again, that's shalita@yahoo.com, and you can check the spelling for that on the screen there.
Stephen Strong, do you want to tell the people how they can find your information and contact you if they have any interesting information to share?
No, because I don't do that stuff.
I do that stuff.
Okay, Evan.
So you can contact us through a few different ways. StephenEvanStrong@gmail.com for email. You can contact us through our website, which is ForgottenOrigin.com, and through Facebook as well. We've got a page there and a group called Forgotten Origins as well on Facebook. So, yeah.
Well, you've reached the end of the first hour. This is James Bartley. You've been listening to our special guest, Evan and Stephen Strong and Michelle Risha. And we're just getting started. If you believe in what we do, if you like what we do here at the Cosmic Switchboard, please go to our website, thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next hour.